The way the federal government defines poverty hasn't changed much since the 1960s. If you earn less than a set amount, you fall below the poverty line and thereby qualify for various kinds of government programs like food stamps. Today, the Commerce Department will announce a new experimental formula that includes things like taxes or tax credits, medical bills, and work expenses. The official calculation will remain the same. Indeed, the Commerce Department says the new yardstick would be an inappropriate way to measure an individual, but it will give us a better picture both nationally and regionally. Rebecca Blank will oversee the development of the new measurement. She serves as Undersecretary for Economic Affairs at the Commerce Department. If you'd like to speak with her about the way federal government measures poverty, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Excuse me. Undersecretary Blank has been kind enough to join us today here in Studio 3A, and thanks very much for coming in.
Good afternoon, Neil.
And I know you plan an official announcement later this afternoon. We appreciate your joining us.
I'm happy to be here.
And what difference is this going to make?
So this supplemental poverty measure gives us an alternative lens on economic need within this country. It's a somewhat more complex calculation than the old poverty measure, which is based purely on people's cash income. And as you noted earlier, this takes account of what people pay in taxes or what they get back in tax credits. It takes account of their work expenses. And the idea here is to look at what people have to spend on food, shelter, and clothing and compare it to a threshold based on food, shelter, and clothing that tells us something different from the official measure about, you know, who might be poor in this country.
Well, if it's just an analytical tool to help us understand where people are doing better and where people mm-hmm. are doing worse in general, not individuals, what difference is it going to make in people's lives?
Well, you know, I'm not sure that it's going to make an individual difference in people's lives tomorrow in any case. I think it gives us a much better understanding over time of how certain policies might be developing and what effect they might be having. And that, in turn, affects how we look at those policies and how we might change them or not change them, you know, in the years and the decades ahead. So, for instance, should we pass health reform? That will affect the supplemental poverty measure because we subtract off out-of-pocket medical expenses, and this would change what people have to pay out-of-pocket. It won't affect the official poverty rate, which is based only on people's cash income. So this would give us some sense of what the impact of that health reform would be on what it's doing to people's, you know, bottom line, what they're having to pay in terms of health expenses.
And do regional differences come in? I mean, is the poverty line the same if you live in San Francisco, where it's very expensive to live, or South Dakota, where it's much less expensive, the cost of living?
The current official poverty line is identical in all parts of the country. And one of the things that we're trying with this new supplemental measure, which is an experimental effort, is to look at regional variation and to adjust that line for regional differences. So, you know, the lines in New York City are going to be a little higher than the lines in some rural areas of the country. But that's almost surely appropriate to look at what people should be spending.
So why don't you calculate things like that in the poverty rate to begin with? It seems an obvious difference. You know, your income at, I'm just picking a number, $15,000 a year is different in New York City than it is in Pierce, South Dakota.
So when the official poverty rate was defined, we actually didn't have the data to be able to do that. And one might argue that there's an advantage of looking at everyone relative to the same point in the income distribution. You know, so the official poverty rate tells us something. It tells us how many people at a certain family size are below $20,000 a year. That's not an uninteresting statistic, but it's different than what the supplemental poverty rate will calculate.
And I'm going to do something very unfair. I'm going to quote yourself. Mm-hmm. Last spring, before you joined Commerce, you were quoted as saying the government needed to come up with a better definition of poverty. Quote, now, if ever, good measures of poverty are important, and we don't have them, so that's an argument for why you really want to do this and do it as fast as possible. Is this the beginning of that?
Well, I think that by producing this supplemental measure, publishing it at the same time as the official rate, it gives us the alternative to look at both of these side by side. Let me note that that official rate, if you want a fast and dirty calculation of how we're doing, people's cash income is a pretty good calculation. And there's a large amount of legislation that looks at eligibility for programs based on people's cash income. So in that sense, I think continuing to estimate and use the official rate is actually a good thing to do. But it's also good to have another lens here.
Would it be better? Would this new figure be better?
It's different. I think it's hard to say one is better or worse. It depends what the question is that you're asking. There are different ways to look at economic need in this country.
As you know better than I, this is a highly controversial subject. If you change the way we define poverty in the country, you're going to change who's eligible for what. A lot more people over here and fewer people over there. Yeah. Is this the thin end of the wedge? Is this the beginning of a way to change the official way we calculate poverty?
So As I noted earlier, the official measure based on cash income is quite useful because it's very easy to look at people's cash income, compare it to some poverty line, and decide whether they might be eligible or not for certain programs. This new measure is a more complex measure. You really can't use it for any individual calculation. It uses a whole variety of information that many people don't know what their full in-kind benefits are. If they're getting, say, a housing subsidy or childcare subsidies, that dollars don't pass through their hands. So this is not something you can use for program eligibility to determine whether one person should get a program or not. And in that sense, you know, I don't think this is going to replace the official line, and I think it's surely not going to change the ways in which programs calculate their eligibility. It's not going to change those dollars.
Should we consider down the line changing the way we calculate the official rate to take into account regional variations and differences? Does it matter if you're calculating, for example, the as this outline suggests, it matters a lot to somebody's poverty level. Do they own their own home outright? Do they have to make a mortgage payment? Are they paying rent? All those things are important.
I agree with that, and that's one reason why this supplemental experimental measure actually tries to take some of those things into account. Again, I'm hesitant to say this is better. It simply asks a different set of questions. It looks at a broader set of resources. You know, the cash-based poverty rate is almost surely a more appropriate rate for eligibility and program calculations, and I don't see that changing.
Our guest is Rebecca Blank, Undersecretary for Economic Affairs at the Department of Commerce, where she oversees the Census Bureau and the Bureau of Economic Analysis. And today we're talking about new ways, unofficial experimental ways to measure poverty. And if you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And let's go to Eliza. Eliza calling us from Boston.
Hi there. I'm a social worker in Boston, and I know that the official poverty rate or the line was set in the 60s the way it was calculated based on the cost of food. And I'm wondering if there's any thought about changing that, because certainly the cost of food for people has gone down relatively, and the cost of housing and health care has gone up. And in my opinion, there are many, many, many more poor people in this country than are officially called poor. It's sort of like the unemployment rate. Once the person stops looking, gives up on finding a job, they're no longer officially considered unemployed, yet they're still unemployed. And so a lot of these statistics show that there are many fewer people who are poor than are actually poor. I mean, it's about impossible for a family to live at the level of income that's considered the highest rate of income allowed for a poor person in this country.
Eliza, let's get a response from the Undersecretary.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, thank you. It's an important set of questions. So, the threshold in this supplemental measure, it will be based on expenditures among people who are at around the 33rd percentile of the income distribution. That's well above poverty, but it's not at the middle of the distribution yet. Their expenditures on food, shelter, clothing, and utilities, on the necessities of life. And the conceptual idea behind this supplemental measure is to set a threshold based on what, you know, non-poor people, you know, sort of lower middle income people are spending, and to compare people's the resources that they have to spend on food, shelter, and clothing to that threshold. So, you know, in that sense, this is a different calculation than the official poverty measure has made.
And you've
I guess my question is whether at some point the official poverty rate by which an individual and a family will be evaluated will be changed, because it doesn't seem particularly just to me how an individual or family's is evaluated that way.
Mm-hmm. So there's
I get what you're saying. You're looking at a more of a macro scale policy level. It's not going to be taken into consideration in
on an individual basis. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, and, you know, there's lots of arguments as to what is a poverty measure. If you go to Europe, actually, they don't use poverty. They use the term social deprivation, and they set a much higher line. And it's really much more sort of a lower-level income living standard than an extreme poverty standard. In the U.S., we've almost always wanted to talk about more extreme poverty standards. And that's not an argument not to think about lower living standards as well, but that's a different statistic, and I admit that's not a statistic that we're trying to duplicate here.
Let's go next to Candy. Candy calling us from Scott's Bluff in Nebraska.
Hello.
Hi, Candy. Go ahead, please.
Hi. My question is, why spend money on an experiment that may or may not help the situation? It helps us understand it, perhaps, but I think the majority of us understand what poverty is. Why not spend the money towards helping the situation, such as Project Self-Sufficiency they have in many areas that help people to get out of poverty, instead of saying, oh,
Well, we're losing Candy's cell phone, but Candy, I think we get the thrust of your question. Go ahead, please.
Right. So, I mean, I absolutely understand the concern that most of our money ought to go on helping the poor and not trying to measure poverty. But, you know, I'm in a job where I'm in charge in part of evaluation and data. And I guess I believe very strongly that data tell us something about how we're doing. And we need to know that before we can actually go out there and define interventions and know whether they're effective or not. So knowing, for instance, whether if we increase the earned income tax credit in this country, what effect that's going to have on people's resources that they have to spend on food, shelter, and clothing strikes me as something we need to know in evaluating that program. Surely we don't want to spend too much of our money on evaluation and data, but we've got to spend some, or we can't look at whether the programs are really having the effects that we want them to have.
Indeed, that's kind of the Census Bureau's raison d'etre.
Absolutely, yes.
There's also provision within this construct to say, we're going to tweak this over time as we find this is more meaningful, we forgot to include that.
So most of our aggregate statistics are actually within the control of one of our federal statistical agencies. The unemployment rate, for instance, is under the control of the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and over time, they have actually tweaked the data, changed the definition a little, updated it to make it more relevant, more current, more useful. And one of these, one of the effects of this supplemental poverty measure initiative will be to turn this over to the Census Bureau and say to the Census Bureau, you, statisticians, methodologists, people who work with data, are in charge of keeping this measure up to date and current. You know, if you think there's methodological changes that will make this better, you should make them. It is within your responsibility.
Would you think over time that as series of policymakers looked at these numbers side by side, that it would become self-evident that this new way of measuring is better than the old way?
I have long ago learned that there are very few things that are self-evident in this world when you look at them. No, I mean, I actually think that different people will use these measures differently. And, you know, there will be healthy debate amongst folks as to, depending on what the question's being asked, which of these measures should be used. I should note that this is quite consistent, for instance, again, to use the unemployment rate analogy, the Bureau of Labor Statistics produces an official unemployment rate. But if you look at that monthly release that they put out every month when they release the unemployment and employment numbers, they release a whole variety of alternative employment numbers and alternative unemployment numbers. They aren't the official number, but they're numbers that give us additional insight on, you know, who's hurting, who's unemployed, and, you know, which groups are being most affected. And that's the way I see the supplemental poverty measure being used.
Rebecca Blank, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Rebecca Blank serves as Undersecretary for Economic Affairs at the Commerce Department, overseeing the development of the new poverty measure, and she will announce it officially later today. We thank her for her time. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.